Okay, so we're diving deep today into a story that's, well, frankly, it's pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah, you could see that.
A newborn baby,
Yeah.
you know, right at the center of a real legal whirlwind.
And this isn't hypothetical, this is a real case.
Oh yeah, absolutely. This was a case in Iowa, in the interest of BGC. And just to set the stage, we've got a mother who initially thinks, okay, adoption is the way to go, but then changes her mind.
Huge wrench in the works right there.
Absolutely. Then there's a man who everyone thinks is the father.
At least at first.
Right, and he signs away his rights too.
Mm-hmm.
Then the real biological father enters the picture. He wants to be a dad. And all this is happening while you've got these adoptive parents who are just waiting, you know, ready to provide a home.
It's a mess for everyone involved.
It's a prime example of how these personal family situations collide with the law. And it raises some really fundamental questions about parental rights and the whole adoption process.
Exactly. And that's why this case, in the interest of BGC, is so important. It really highlights the legal framework around how families are created and sometimes how they're, you know, taken apart.
Right. It's not about deciding what subjectively seems like the best home for a child. It's about following the law.
Absolutely.
So you've shared some great materials with me to prepare for this deep dive. We've got expert analysis on this specific case and a really detailed brief that lays out all the facts. Then we've got a standard legal brief that gets into the core arguments and the court's decisions. So today we're going to try to untangle this whole situation.
Sounds good to me.
We want to understand why this adoption case became so complicated legally, what it tells us about the rights of parents and especially the rights of unwed fathers, and then what the key takeaway lessons are for anyone, you know, working in family law or just trying to make sense of it all.
Those are great goals.
Where do you think we should start with all this?
Well, given all the twists and turns in this case, I think starting with the timeline is the best way to go. You know, lay out the facts chronologically so we can see how this thing unfolded.
Makes sense.
So it all begins with the birth of BGC. The baby was born on February 8th, 1991, to an unmarried woman named Kara.
Okay, and from what I understand, Kara decides to give up her parental rights to allow for adoption.
You got it.
Yeah.
And here's where things start to get tricky. She incorrectly names a man, Scott, as the baby's father.
Ah, so right from the get-go, there's this crucial piece of misinformation.
Exactly. And it has big consequences. Both Kara and this Scott, they sign waivers of notice for the hearing to terminate their parental rights.
Just to be clear, a waiver of notice basically means they're giving up their right to be informed about the hearing.
Right. So based on these waivers, the juvenile court goes ahead and terminates what they believe are the parental rights of both parents.
And after that, the potential adoptive parents, RD and JD, they're given custody of the newborn.
That's right. It seems like everything is moving smoothly toward the adoption.
But then there's a twist, right? Kara changes her mind.
Yep. Not too long after the termination order, Kara files a motion with the court. She wants them to set aside the termination of her rights. Basically, she's saying, hold on, I made a mistake.
Okay, so she's having second thoughts about the adoption, but is that all?
There's more. In this motion, she drops a bombshell. Daniel is the actual biological father of BGC, not Scott.
Wow, talk about a game changer.
Right. This completely changes everything.
So what happens when Daniel is finally identified as the father?
Well, Daniel takes action as soon as he finds out. He jumps into the ongoing adoption proceedings that are happening in the district court. He's saying, hey, wait a minute, I'm the father. I never got a chance to say anything.
So now you've got the juvenile court, who's already terminated the rights of the people they thought were the parents. And then you've got the biological father stepping up and saying, hold on, that's not right. It's a complicated situation.
Very complicated.
What did the juvenile court do about Kara's request to undo that initial termination?
They actually denied her motion. Yeah. They basically said, look, this case is already with the adoption court. Let them handle it.
Interesting. So despite the new information about the father, the juvenile court basically washes their hands of the situation.
That's how it appears.
Yeah.
But the case wasn't over. The legal battle continued in the district court, where the adoption petition filed by RD and JD was being considered.
Okay, and what happened in the district court? Did they come to a different conclusion about Daniel's rights?
They did. The district court made a few key findings. First, they confirmed through evidence that Daniel was definitely BGC's biological father. Second, and this is really important, they found that Daniel had not abandoned the child.
Okay, so that's huge.
It is. Based on these findings, the district court denied the adoption petition from RD and JD.
So that means the adoption can't go forward.
Right, and they went even further. they ordered that the baby be given to Daniel.
Wow. Imagine the emotional roller coaster for everyone involved.
I know, right?
Yeah.
First, the adoptive parents think they're getting a child. Then it's taken away.
Talk about a stressful situation. But the legal back and forth didn't end there, right?
Nope. The adoptive parents appealed the district court's decision. They took it to the Iowa Court of Appeals.
Okay, and what happened at that level?
The Court of Appeals actually reversed the juvenile court's termination of Kara's parental rights.
So they undid what the juvenile court had done.
Yep. Their reasoning was that the initial termination might have been flawed because they had the wrong father.
So now you've got different courts making different decisions.
Exactly. It's a real legal tug of war. Mm. And that's when the Iowa Supreme Court steps in. They're the highest court in the state, and they have the final say.
So the Iowa Supreme Court takes on this case to try to settle these conflicting rulings.
Right. They granted further review and basically combined both parts of the case. Kara's attempt to undo the termination of her rights and the question of whether the adoption should be allowed.
Okay, so they're looking at the whole picture. Now, given all this complexity, what were the specific legal issues that the Iowa Supreme Court had to address?
There were two big questions. The first was whether the juvenile court made a mistake by refusing to even consider Kara's motions to overturn the termination of her rights, you know, after they found out about Daniel.
Okay, so that's question number one. And the second question?
The second question was whether the district court was right to deny the adoption because Daniel, the biological father, had never had his parental rights officially terminated.
Right, because legally speaking, you can't just bypass a parent's rights.
Exactly.
So those are the two big legal issues the court had to figure out, and their answers would determine the outcome for BGC and everyone involved.
Yep. High stakes for sure.
So what did the Iowa Supreme Court ultimately decide on these two crucial points?
On the first issue about Kara's rights, they sided with her.
They did.
They said yes, the juvenile court messed up by not even looking at her arguments. They argued that the juvenile court still had the authority to rule on Kara's motions, even though the adoption case was with a different court.
So they're saying the juvenile court shouldn't have just dismissed her so quickly?
Exactly. They should have taken her request seriously, especially given the new information about the father.
Okay, that makes sense. And what about the second question, the one about whether the adoption was valid?
On that issue, the Iowa Supreme Court agreed with the district court.
So they also said the adoption couldn't go forward.
Right. Their reasoning was really straightforward.
Yeah.
They said that because Daniel's parental rights had never been legally terminated, the adoption just couldn't proceed legally.
It didn't matter what anyone else wanted or what the current situation was.
Nope. It all came down to that one crucial point.
So let's dig into the reasoning behind the majority's decision. What were the key legal principles that they based their conclusions on?
Okay, so there are two big principles at play here that are super important for understanding family law. The first one is what's called strict statutory compliance. It means you got to follow the law to the letter, especially when it comes to adoptions, Iowa law specifically. Chapter 600 and 600A of their legal code, it lays out very specific procedures for handling adoptions and, even more importantly, for terminating parental rights.
So it's not enough for everyone to be in agreement or for things to just seem like they're going in a good direction?
Nope. You got to dot your I's and cross your law, legally speaking.
Every single step has to be followed exactly as the law says.
Precisely. The court was very firm on that point. These aren't just suggestions, they're requirements.
Okay, so that's principle number one. What about the second big principle?
The second one is the concept of due process. It's guaranteed by the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution.
Due process basically means that everyone has the right to a fair legal process, right?
Right. And that includes parents. In this case, the court was especially focused on protecting the rights of unwed fathers. They made it very clear that courts can't just ignore these fundamental rights, even if they think a different outcome would be better for the child.
So you can't just say, well, this other family seems like a better fit, so let's just give them the baby.
Exactly. Due process has to be followed no matter what.
Okay, so those are the big legal principles.
Yeah.
But how did the court connect these principles to the specific facts of BGC's case?
Well, when it came to Daniel, the court put a lot of emphasis on what he did once he found out he was the father.
Okay.
The evidence showed that Daniel reached out to Kara pretty quickly after learning the truth, and he actively tried to get custody of BGC.
So he was showing that he wanted to be involved in his child's life.
Exactly. And the court said these actions prove that he didn't abandon BGC.
Right, because if he had just ignored the situation, that would be a different story.
Yep. But he didn't. He fought for his right to be a father.
And that was a point of disagreement between the majority and the dissenting justices, right? Whether or not Daniel had abandoned his child.
Absolutely. That was a big sticking point. The majority said there wasn't enough evidence to say that he had abandoned the child. They said his actions showed he wanted to be a dad.
But the dissenting opinion didn't see it that way.
Nope. The dissent focused on Daniel's past. He had allegedly abandoned other children in previous situations.
Oh, so there was a history there.
Yeah. And because of that history, the dissent argued that the adoption should be allowed to proceed. They basically said, look, this guy has a pattern of walking away from his kids. We shouldn't let him do that again.
Okay, I see their point. It seems like they were concerned about disrupting the stability that BGC already had with adoptive parents.
Right. They were worried about what would happen to the child if they suddenly changed things.
And that really highlights the tension between following the letter of the law and considering what seems best for the child's well-being in a practical sense.
Absolutely. It's a classic dilemma in family law.
So the majority focused on upholding Daniel's rights as a father, while the dissent prioritized the child's stability.
Exactly. And the majority actually used a phrase, uncontrolled social engineering, to describe what they were worried about.
What do they mean by that?
They were saying that if courts start making decisions based on what they subjectively think is best for a child without following the law, it creates a slippery slope.
Like it could open the door for decisions that aren't fair or consistent.
Right. They argued that we need to have clear legal rules and follow them even when it's hard, even when it leads to outcomes that don't feel good.
Because otherwise it undermines the rights of parents and creates a lot of uncertainty in these cases.
Precisely.
Okay, so this case seems like it has some major implications for family law in general. What are some of the big takeaways that we should remember from our discussion?
I think the biggest takeaway is this. Parental rights are fundamental constitutional rights. They're protected by the highest law of the land. And the state can't just take those rights away without a very good reason and without following the proper legal procedures.
So this case really reinforces the importance of those rights.
It does. And it also shows us just how tricky family law can be. You've got these incredibly personal and emotional situations, but they have to be dealt with within a strict legal framework. And sometimes those two things clash.
Right. It's not always easy to find the right balance.
Nope. And for legal professionals specifically, there are some really practical lessons to learn from this case. The first one is you absolutely have to be sure about who the father is.
Don't just take someone's word for it.
Right. Do your due diligence.
Yeah.
Verify paternity. And then you have to follow the law to the letter when it comes to terminating parental rights. Every single step has to be done correctly.
No shortcuts.
No shortcuts. Nope. And no assumptions either. You can't just assume that because a mother names a certain man as the father, that it's true.
You have to independently confirm that information.
Yes. Because as this case shows, a simple mistake like that can have huge consequences. It can unravel an entire adoption.
And potentially cause a lot of heartache for everyone involved.
Exactly. So that's lesson number one for lawyers working in this area. Lesson number two is about the difference between the best interests of the child standard and the grounds for terminating parental rights.
Okay, remind me about that distinction.
So when courts are deciding custody disputes, you know, after parental rights have been terminated, they often use the best interests of the child standard. They look at what's going to be best for the child's well-being.
Right.
But yeah. You can't use that standard when you're deciding whether to terminate parental rights in the first place. The law requires specific grounds for termination. You can't just say, well, this other home seems better, so let's terminate the biological parent's rights.
It has to be more than just a subjective feeling that a different situation would be better for the child.
Exactly. There have to be solid legal reasons for termination, and those reasons are spelled out in the law.
Okay, so that's a key distinction that lawyers need to keep in mind.
Absolutely. And the final takeaway from this case is that attention to detail matters.
Especially in family law.
Especially in family law. Even a seemingly small mistake or oversight can have massive ripple effects. It can overturn an entire adoption and cause chaos for everyone involved.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into In the Interest of BGC, what's the one big message that you hope listeners will take away from all this?
I think the Iowa Supreme Court said it best. Adoptions are creatures of statute, no exceptions. It's a very clear reminder that adoptions have to follow the law very strictly. There are no shortcuts, no exceptions. And this applies to everything from verifying paternity to terminating parental rights to finalizing the adoption itself.
It's a reminder that even in these deeply personal and emotional situations, the law has to be followed.
Exactly. And it makes you think about all the other cases out there that might be similar to this one, all the children who are affected by these legal battles. And it really emphasizes the need to make sure that legal procedures are followed properly to protect everyone's rights.
Right, because those procedures exist for a reason. They're meant to ensure fairness and protect fundamental rights.
Absolutely. And it leaves us with a question for our listeners to consider. In a society that values both the well-being of children and the rights of parents, how do we handle these really tough situations where those values might conflict? Especially when parental rights weren't properly addressed at the beginning. How do we navigate that ethically and legally?
It's a question that doesn't have easy answers.
Definitely not. But it's something we have to keep thinking about and debating. And cases like, in the interest of BGC, they force us to confront these complex issues head on.
They remind us that family law is about more than just rules and procedures. It's about real people's lives and the future of children.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, that's about all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining me for this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And to our listeners out there, we hope this discussion has given you some food for thought. We'll be back next time with another deep dive into the world of law.
Until then,
keep those legal minds sharp.
And thanks for listening.
We'll see you soon.
See ya.